We've got a really nice conversation that will be led by Holly Kernan, who is the news director at KLW, who also teaches at Mills College, who has done great work around child welfare issues and great work generally. You built up the newsroom at KLW, so we've got more than one voice in local radio in the Bay Area, thanks to this woman right here. So thank you for that. And we have Heather, Miriam, and Ricardo, who are joining us to have a conversation about child welfare and the reasons why and what happens when kids enter the system.
Well, thanks for having us here. We've got our panel of experts to really kind of delve into this issue. So my name is Miriam, and I'm a sophomore at Cal, and I entered care as a newborn, and I was in care. I bounced around in care until I was 12 years old, and my experience in care, I've had good homes, and I've also had bad homes.
So my name is Ricardo. I'm currently, I want to say, second year at Fresno City. And I entered the system when I was 12, along with my brother and my two sisters, all younger than me. And I've had good placements, I've had bad placements, I've had in-between placements. Foster care system is kind of like a roller coaster ride. I've been through, currently I'm in my 38th foster home. This last one, though, I've been at, I want to say, close to a year and a half now. So this one's panned out. And I've been in 4 group homes, spent some time in the juvenile justice system. I've hit a lot of areas of the system. And well, since leaving the group home 2 weeks before I turned 17, I've only been in 2 foster homes, and one which lasted about 2 weeks. For some reason, they were thinking when I turned 18, I was going to automatically leave under AB 12. You can stay until you're 21 now. Foster dad had a problem. Foster mom didn't. And so I turned 18, and this last foster home accepted me, even though I was 18 years old already. And I've been with them for about a year and a half. And that's a little bit about me.
I'm Heather. I entered the foster care system when I was 13 years old. I've had 4 placements, some good, some bad, some really good. I am a third year at San Francisco State, and I'm studying visual communication design.
Okay, well, I'm Jennifer Rodriguez. I'm the executive director of the Youth Law Center. let's see, I've been a lawyer there for the past 6.5 years, and prior to that, I was the legislative and policy person for the California Youth Connection. I actually grew up in CYC. CYC was where I decided I wanted to become a lawyer. And so that's a little bit about my trajectory. And I was in foster care quite a while ago compared to the actual youth you have on the panel. But when I was in care, I was basically an institutional kid. I spent 2 years on the street and ended up formally getting ticketed into the system when I was 12, even though child welfare had been involved with my family since the time I was born. My very first placement was a group home because I was a street kid, and so when you're a street kid, you are used to being awake at night, sleeping during the daytime. I had a lot of behaviors that didn't lend themselves well to a family environment. And the problem with group care is once you get into one group home, it's really, really difficult to get out into a family placement. So I learned lots of new behaviors in the group homes that I was at, and every like new behavior that I added onto my resume made me even further disqualified to be in a family home. So I went in sort of knowing how to hustle in certain ways, learned how to steal vans and run away and do all kinds of other things that I hadn't known how to do and been exposed to prior to being in a group home. So I spent all of my teen years group homes, shelters, juvenile hall, psychiatric hospitals, mm-hmm. basically every kind of institutional care you can think of. I was in it, and then finally aged out at 18 and went to Job Corps, which was the best institution that I was in. It was outside of the system, and that's where I got my GED and was sort of able to get a foundation to launch my life.
Well, and launch it you have. Well done. So you brought up the social worker question, and I just wanted to find out a little bit more about what that relationship is like and what makes a good social worker? I know you've got something to say. I think you do too. What do you think, Marion?
So what makes up a good social worker?
Yeah.
So a good social worker, she's understanding. She does not try to force a relationship upon you. I'm trying to think of my good social workers. She's comforting. She checks in with you when she's supposed to.
How often is she supposed to?
Once a month.
Yes.
Once a month. And when you were a little kid, mm-hmm. try and think back to 5 or 6 or 7, what did it feel like to have to interact with this social worker?
So I learned to hate social workers. When I was 5 years old, I had a social worker I never saw until one day. She told me that my mother had passed away. And that was it. That's the last time I saw her. So she was not active in my life at all.
And it seems like I hear that from so many foster kids. Why is this so common, or maybe it isn't such a common experience of having that social worker who's supposed to be your main advocate, right? That it doesn't feel like that's what the relationship is.
To get a little opinionated real quick, so social workers, last time I checked in San Joaquin, they haven't hired a social worker in about 9-10 years. So their job security is pretty good, mm-hmm. and as long as they're doing their paperwork, moving through, and you are a piece of their paperwork, as long as they're pushing that through, they're pretty good. They don't have to be comforting and understanding. They just have to do their paperwork, do everything they're supposed to, and push it off. So a lot of social workers won't take that extra step and make you feel like a person rather than a piece of paper. They'll just knock everything out and keep it moving like they're supposed to, because they're not evaluated on that. And if they do that or if they don't do that, it's not going to make them lose their job or anything.
How important are they in terms of your experience in the system?
They control your experience in the system.
They control your experience in the system. So they have a lot of power. And do you think, Jennifer, that this is changing at all now?
No, I don't. I mean, from a policy perspective, I mean, to touch on what you said and on what you said, one of the issues is that in terms of the training that social workers get, social workers have approximately one class in child development during the course of their MSW training. So if you ask social workers what they know about child development, they'll say they studied it. And when you look at the curricula, you'll see that they took one class in human development, which sort of spans birth to adulthood. And so they don't get training on how to talk to a five-year-old and help you deal with grief and loss and trauma. What they're getting is sort of an overview. The other thing that's happened with social work over the years is that because so many incidents have happened where social workers have, I mean, a child's experience is controlled by social workers. Your entire experience is based on decisions that an individual person makes. And we all know when people make decisions, especially when they're just sort of, you know, excuse my language, but when they're off the top of your butt, you know, that you don't really have any basis. If you walk into a home and say, is this child at risk? They're not using any sort of, typically, even when there's a structured decision-making tool or some other formal, it's your opinion about what that child needs, what that family needs. And so there's lots of points where mistakes can be made. And so, you know, really we don't, in years with the mistakes, what we've ended up doing is making it very manualized. We've given social workers a lot of tools, like here's one checklist to fill out, here's another tool to use to assess. And I think what happens is that social workers take all the tools, they take all the paperwork that you hear talked about, and they distance themselves from the actual social work, from the work of being able to talk to youth, being able to have conversations with them, being able to build a relationship. And to me, that's what social work actually should be, is it should be a relationship where somebody who can connect with you sits down and says, I care about you, I have empathy for your situation, what do you need? Tell me what you need. And then particularly with older youth, let me help you figure out how to make a plan, not let me tell you what you're going to do with your life, because that's not helpful to anyone. That doesn't help you in the long run of your life. The only other place where that's stimulated later on is prison. If you go to prison, yeah, somebody will tell you this is what you do at this time in this way. But in real life, when you're an adult, you have to learn how to do all of that on your own. The other thing I want to say on your point is that social workers are unionized, and that creates an issue because really any mistake that a social worker makes, it is true that sort of all they have to do is show up and meet sort of bare minimum expectations and nothing will happen to them. And it's very, very difficult to hold social workers accountable for the mistakes that they make or for errors like not going and seeing a youth monthly when they're supposed to. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with unions, but it is very, very difficult in terms of accountability in the system when you do have a union in place with somebody who's supposed to, who's so directly involved with controlling a youth's life.
I wonder just, I'm going to sound incredibly naive here, but it just seems like this would be a piece of the system that would be relatively easy to change because it's a culture shift, right? You're not asking for more money in the system. You're just asking for a different orientation, for some training probably. But, I mean, is this something that you're seeing the needle move at all? Is this something you guys are pushing at CYC? What? I mean, it seems like such a critical thing that shouldn't be that hard to change. Why is it?
Well, there has to be a fundamental belief about what's happening here, that the youth that the social workers are working with are not just clients who receive services, but they're actually people who have opinions and should be involved in their own life. And I think CYC has helped a lot in sort of changing that perception. And you guys could probably share experiences about when you've done trainings for social workers, some of the perceptions that have changed of maybe some of them never even knew you had thoughts or opinions or recommendations of your own until you were given that forum.
So if I were a social worker right here, and say I'm representing a whole conference of social workers, what are maybe five things you would want me to do differently or think about or be aware of?
I would want social workers to know that they need to talk to you like you're a person and not just like a caseload. Like, I had one good social worker and the whole time I was in care, and, you know, she cared, she showed up on the right days and called, returned my phone calls and all that. But the rest of them, I couldn't get them to return my calls, couldn't get them to help me do the things I needed to do. My last social worker, before I aged out, would come once a month, would not look at me in the eyes, would read his little thing, say, how's your health?
Like a questionnaire,
yeah,
or something?
How's your health? And then he'd write it down. How's school? He'd write it down. Wouldn't ask any follow-up questions, just a simple, good, it's fine, it'd work out. And then he'd go, okay, I'm going to talk to your foster parents now. You can leave, go get them. Then he'd leave after.
Sorry,
and the last meeting I had with him before I aged out, he said, all right, have a nice life. Have a nice life. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess that would be my biggest thing is, you know, we have all these people in our lives who didn't treat us like we were people. And then we finally get put in the system and, you know, these are the people who are supposed to care the most about our well-being, and we're just questions on a piece of paper.
Paperwork.
Yeah.
It seems like that gets to your comment about institutionalization and being treated, you know, as a piece of this institution as opposed to a human being. What would you say to the social workers of America?
I mean, I would say, number one, they need to understand how important their job is. I don't feel like social workers actually understand the gravity of, like, what we've entrusted them with. I mean, they do hold control over basically every element of your life. They make decisions about where you're going to live and who's going to care for you. And to me, that was the biggest impact for me. It actually wasn't really... I had lots of different social workers. I moved through lots of different counties in the Bay Area, and I'd see the social workers sometimes once a month, sometimes every few months, and, you know, some of them I didn't like, some of them I did like, my favorite ones took me to McDonald's. I mean, they were almost insignificant. I don't ever remember any of them really doing social work with me. But they did have control over everything. They had control over the visits with my family. They had control over the decision about whether I was going to return home. My social worker was the only person I could go to when things were happening in my placement. And she decided whether I was going to a level 14 group home or staying in a level 12 group home. She held every decision in her hand. And I'm saying she because I actually had all female social workers.
Did it feel like she was wielding that power over you?
Some of them, it felt like they were wielding their power. And others, it just felt like they didn't care. They were on their job. And it was not any different to them than if they had a job, you know, making water bottles at a factory. When it turned 5 o'clock, they were off the clock and, you know, you couldn't reach them. They wouldn't return phone calls. They wouldn't. And to me now looking, I just would want them to understand, do you understand this is actually, it's bigger than even parenting your own kid, because you've got a child who basically every single adult in their life has let them down up to this point. And now you have the power. You have all of this power in your hand. You need to use it responsibly. And you need to understand what it is that you stand in the way of a good outcome, a bad outcome, of a child being abused, of a child dying at the most extreme. I mean, I feel like they don't, number one, they should understand it. And then number two, you should feel excited and invigorated by that. Like, I have the chance to really change somebody's life. Not most social workers that I talk to seem like they feel sort of depressed and hopeless by that feeling. And I would want them to feel excited, like what I do matters. And, you know, I mean, it's the same for any of us that work in the system. We should feel like we really matter, that people are depending on us. And there are people who don't have a whole lot of people to depend on. So,
gotcha. Repeat the question one more time. I'll say
I'm representing the social workers of America here. And you get to tell me the stuff that I should start thinking about.
So, okay. I want to go off first and say also, if they didn't know where it come from, because I know my rap sheet didn't look too good at multiple placements I went in, picked back off what she said earlier, okay, let me see your false prints. It showed up in a few CYC skits I've seen where they talk to the youth and then like, okay, well, you can go now, call a false parent now. What's really going on? They don't believe anything you say. You know, yeah. Sure, they'll write it down and be like, okay, now, how's she really doing in school? How is she really doing with her health? How's she really like this? Like, you know, like, they don't believe anything I say. The second thing would be taking that extra step. When I was in care, some youth find that social worker where before you go into a house, they'll arrange you a house meeting. And you can go, you can meet the family, you can see what it's all about. It's usually fake, but you can go and meet the
what
family.
What do you mean it's usually fake?
Okay, I was in this one house, all right, where I went, and I met the family on a weekend getaway. I'm like, okay, this is cool. They take me out to eat. I was like, well, I've never been there. That's pretty cool. Fancy restaurant, at least to me. I thought I should have been wearing a suit or something.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, oh, this is cool. They're really nice. I was like, yeah, this time, free time, you can do this. And then I was like, okay, you know, I really like this family. All right, move me in. And then, like, day I moved in, not even 20 minutes, I get unpacking, and they come in the room. They're like, okay, this is how it really works. And I was like, hella thrown off. I was like, whoa. So that's how it's fake. But a part of that is I've only witnessed the family visits about 3 out of the 38 false homes I've been in where I got to visit the family first. Yeah, I just, here's your new family, you're with them. And then it's kind of like a weird, awkward getting to know each other moment. I don't know. Because the feeling of false care sucks, man. Like, you're taken from your family, everything you know, you ripped from your school, everything. Thrown into a new house, they say, here's your new family, here's your new school, here's your new brother, your new sister, new mom, dad,